This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas, presented by U-Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Tan Chung Han, and today on The Breakfast Grill, we're going to focus on the midterm review of the 11th Malaysia Plan, which sets the medium-term framework for the country through 2020. And for that, we now welcome Puan Zakia Jaafar. She's the Deputy Director General for the Macroeconomic Section at the EPU, that's the Economic Planning Unit. Good morning, Puan Zakia, and welcome to the program.
Assalamualaikum and top of the morning to you too and to our listeners.
Thank you very much. Now, just to give you guys some context, Puan Zakia is one of the lead authors for the 11th Malaysia Plan. So folks, if you have any questions, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Again, that's 018-789-8899. Or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, Puan Zakia, you are part of the EPU under both BN. Well, you've been there since 1991, right? And then now under Pakatan. So you've certainly got the context here. Brief summary here, you know, what's the biggest difference in terms of the approach between this revised 11th Malaysia Plan and the original iteration of the plan?
Thank you. Thank you for having us. First off, the biggest difference, I would say that now we can be more transparent about our analysis of our socioeconomic performance. If you look at the first 2 years of our economy, at macro level, by all accounts, it looks like we are doing okay. The economy expanded within target with, you know, low and stable inflation with full employment. But if we deep dive, we see a lot of inequality in terms of growth, in terms of distribution of income. And all this inequality and unequal distribution of growth has made growth less meaningful to the people. So if you look at our midterm review, we see in the second part how we're going to address that.
Right. So perhaps the fudging of the numbers, perhaps at the micro level, but the macro level, everything looks rosy and dandy. Is that right?
Well, it's not really fudging in that case.
But you say more transparent. So
Exactly. So, and if you look at our pillars, you see that we put forth all the issues and challenges in terms of this unequal distribution ahead to, you know, to address it.
Right. And I certainly noticed the first pillar there, which highlights the reform agenda. And I think that's been broadly welcomed by most sections of Malaysian society here. But then looking at the other five pillars, so there are six in total. First one is on the reform agenda. What about the other five then? How much of this was perhaps rebadged for Pakatan? Because again, keeping in mind, you guys had worked on this for 12 months starting in May 2017. Then May 9th happened. I'm going to assume you guys had to scramble to try and accommodate these changes, right? So how much of this is brand spanking new? How much of this has been rebadged for Pakatan?
Well, addressing Pillar 2 to Pillar 6, those are our structural issues. No matter who who's in power, we still have low productivity. We still have unbalanced regional development, and few other structural issues that we need to address. No matter who is in power, so. But the way and the approach to solve all these issues will be slightly different.
How so?
And you can see, like, for instance, we put forth reforming governance as the number one pillar. That is important. If you can imagine, we're having pillars in a house. If your foundation and the pillars is not strong, no matter you have fancy furniture in the house, if the roof breaks down, it won't mean anything. So that must be fixed first. Hence, we put forward reforming governance as the number one pillar.
And I agree with you there. But, you know, when it comes to the integrity of this document here, again, keeping in mind that this was perhaps a rush job, at least some elements of it may have been a rush job, right? 3-4 months to work on the changes versus the 12 months that traditionally accompanies such a midterm review. Can you assure Malaysians that, you know, there was adequate thought, adequate planning, adequate resources put behind behind this midterm review?
Right. As you mentioned, we started the work way back in May. By the time April 2018, the review was almost completed. When the general election came along, and there was a change in administration, the first thing that we did we realigned the existing policies and strategies to the manifesto, the Buku Harapan, and we found that the midterm review actually covered most of the promises in the manifesto. So it is not exactly a rush job in that sense. So we took on board additional elements in the Buku Harapan which wasn't covered before. And a lot of it is about governance.
Now, Puan Zakia, you bring up the manifesto, but let's face it, many Malaysians have already felt let down by the Pakatan Manifesto. How much credibility does this revised 11th Malaysia plan have if it's being filtered through this manifesto? I mean, should we hold it in the same regard as the Pakatan Manifesto?
Well, we actually, you're right in some sense, but the spirit of that manifesto is already embedded in the midterm review. Some things we cannot fix immediately. Some things need to take time to change, but the spirit is there, and that is what we make certain appear in the midterm review.
But this was the same criticism aimed at previous iterations of Malaysia plans as well, right? The spirit is there, the ambition is there, but failing in execution risk. So right. How are you going to assure Malaysians, those listening right now, that it will be different this time around?
Right. The 11 Malaysia plan was crafted to be very much implemented driven. You are right. Planning may be our forte, but we have a lot of room for improvement in implementation. You're right there. So if you look at our 11 Malaysia plan, we have many KPIs attached to all the targets. And the same MO, the same approach will be applied to the midterm review. So if you look at the midterm review, we have many, many targets there. And that is already embedded in our monitoring system.
All right. And we'll dive deeper into the details after the break. But in a few minutes that we have before we go to break, I just want to understand the relevance of these medium-term development plans in this Malaysia Baru. Because if you look at, say, India, right, they ditched theirs. You know, last year was the end of theirs. Singapore never bothered to have one. So really, moving forward in this Malaysia Baru, should we still have this reliance on medium-term development plans?
Funny that you should ask that question, because we asked the same question, about 4 years ago when we drafted the 11 plan.
I mean, aside from giving you job security, lah, you know.
Yes, obviously the pro team won, and we did have the 11 Malaysia plan. But think of the Malaysia plan as a map to go from one destination to another. For example, you want to take your family to a new place. You have to plan, do I take the car? Do I take the plane? Mapping the journey, you plan your the pit stops. Midway, your kid will ask, Daddy, are we there yet? So it's the same thing. We plan this ahead in quite an unknown journey with all the pitfalls, prepare ourselves, make sure everybody is on board, nobody is left behind, and that is what inclusive development means. And then midway, we ask ourselves, are we there yet? So that's what the midterm review is. And another thing, yes, for some time, development planning at national level may be out of trend, but we see that it's coming back.
Because I believe like South Korea, right? They ditched it in the 90s and they brought it back, I think, this year. But coming back to the idea for these kind of top-down planning, right? Going back to the example you mentioned that using that roadmap for that family holiday, that assumes that all of Malaysia wants to go in the same direction, right? As opposed to, say, how do you reconcile this kind of top-down planning versus comments made by the Minister of Finance, by the Prime Minister, that they want to let the private sector lead economic growth? How do you reconcile the two here?
Right. Well, all our plans are based on engagement. For instance, the 11 Malaysia plan, the way we did it, it was top down and bottoms up. We engaged with nearly 6,000 stakeholders over a year between 2004 and 2015. And the output of all these engagements were 21 strategy papers, actually, which were uploaded on our website. You can see all the issues and challenges raised by all these stakeholders and the recommendations to address them. Those 21 strategy papers actually were the foundation for the 11 Malaysia plan to make it more wholesome and comprehensive. So, and the same thing for the midterm review. We did engage with the new government and our stakeholders in a smaller scale because we did we prepared the engagement some time back.
Right, but then who had greater sway here, the bottom-up approach or the manifesto?
A combination, I must say.
When we that's very politically correct now, though.
But we realigned both, and as I mentioned, it's almost about 85% to 90% the same.
All right, we are speaking to Puan Zakia Jaafar, Deputy Director General for the Macroeconomic Section at the EPU. After the break, we'll dive deeper into some of these revised macroeconomic targets. And some of these have been revised downwards or weaker position. We'll find out why after this, right here on BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Thanks for staying with us here on the Breakfast Grill. I am Tan Chung Han, and with me live in the studio is Puan Zakia Jaafar. She's the Deputy Director General for the Macroeconomic Section with the EPU, that's the Economic Planning Unit. Now, Puan Zakia, you've been with the EPU since 1991, and you, again, the head for the Macro Unit, right? I want to zoom in on expertise here, specifically page 20 of the Executive Summary, which is the selected targets for the country's macroeconomic prospects through 2020. I hear the flipping of pages. You have it in front of you. Now, what I found intriguing from that page was that most of the 11 targets now have a lower or weaker target. Mm. Why?
Right. If you look at our 2016 numbers, you know, our GDP didn't expand it as targeted. It was 4.2, way below what we targeted, between 5 to 6. And that was simply because of the lower world GDP and trade performance. Now, we are a very open economy, 130%. The external sector made up about 130% of our GDP, so very much vulnerable to what happens outside. Now, although we rebounded fully in 2017, the 2016 numbers dampened our medium-term growth trajectory. And things doesn't really look that rosy in the next 3 years with a lot of, you know, trade tensions between major economies, you know, the volatility of commodity prices and so on. So it will be a challenge for us to fulfill the original target set way back 3 years ago. So that's why we made it more realistic in this sense. And as many times our PM has alluded, growth in itself, you know, it's not that important as making it meaningful. So it's more about raising the purchasing power of the people rather than growth per se.
All right. So, okay, you're talking about that 50 basis point downward revision in the range for GDP growth, right, through 2020. That's fine. But then while you say that you want to try to make it more meaningful, or rather the minister and the prime minister says that, but when you look at some indicators that affects the average Malaysian, the individual, right, that has been revised downward as well. I'm talking about the unemployment rate. Initial target, 2.8%, now below 3.5%. Well, guess what? We're already there, right? The median monthly wage, initially targeted for 2,500 ringgit, now revised downwards to 2,400 ringgit. And look, let's be honest here. When it comes to how the Pakatan government has gone about trying to improve the pay, the income side for Malaysians, they've been found wanting. Minimum wage, initially targeted 1,005, came in at a measly 1,050. You know, so really, how meaningful is 2,400 ringgit for the average worker in Malaysia in 2020? How meaningful is it that we have already going to just maintain the unemployment rate in 2020 compared to what we have right now. How meaningful is that?
Right. I get you. All these things, we relate to a lot of structural issues that it takes time to solve or to be addressed over time. So we need more time to address all this. The biggest thing is to ensure that our industries restructure from a labor-intensive production structure to a more capital-intensive and generating high-income jobs. If we increase the minimum wage so much and so soon, there will be adding cost to business. And chances are, yes, our income may rise, but also cost of products and services. So, as I said, it must be meaningful. And structural issues will take time to be solved. So we rather do things gradually.
But how do you compel then, business owners here in Malaysia, employers, to meaningfully raise those wages? I mean, because I look at, say, the chart there when it comes to GDP by income, right?
Yes.
And we spoke about this when I first met you a couple of days ago, right? About how you are going to compel businesses to give up more of their share of the income by 2020. So you expect businesses to pay employees more, but, is it going to be a company with productivity growth? What's going to compel them to part with their money?
Right. Productivity is a push, the number one, actually, macro strategy that we need to push. Last year, we introduced launched the productivity blueprint, actually, to ensure that labor productivity increased as fast as income, which we don't see in the last few years. If labor productivity increases within target, then we can raise income accordingly. Now, we see in the US the similar problem happens in the sense that the compensation of employees are not rising as much as the income by capital owners. It's interesting, in some states in the US, they introduce a law and reward companies who treated their workers decently.
But do you see this as being business friendly? Is this revised 11th Malaysia plan business friendly? Again, what is your message to business owners if you're going to tell them that, hey, by 2020, business owners, your share of GDP by income is going to be less and you got to pay your employees more? Compensation to employees set to take up a bigger share of GDP by income compared to capital owners. What's your message to them?
Look, it's a virtuous cycle. If you treat your workers well, they will treat your clients well. They will be more productive. More output for the company and more profit. It's a virtuous cycle. So it takes a lot of convincing. We are Malaysia Productivity Corporation is going all out to increase this awareness among companies. When we did a survey, some of the reasons why businesses are not embarking on improving labor productivity is simply they are happy where they are. Although they think productivity is important, they may not know how to do that. So the Malaysia Productivity Corporation is launching a lot of programs helping businesses to improve their labor productivity and to compensate with that increasing in the wages.
Well, you heard it here, business owners. Now, I wonder if that message is palatable to business owners here in Malaysia. Part more with your money by 2020. Give it to the employees to maintain that virtuous cycle, as Puan Zakia calls it. All right, we're going to take a call now from ICS, in just a bit. Lawrence Todd is the Director for Research and Development. But Puan Zakia, before we get to that call, I just want to stay on some macro indicators here. So again, I'm looking at some of these. Fiscal deficit, 3% of GDP. We already hit that last year, right? And then at the same time, development expenditure ceiling revised downwards by 40 billion ringgit down to 220 billion ringgit for the overall period, 2016 to 2020. Now, the narrative of the government is that, you know, these are the necessary trade-offs for the reforms undertaken.
Yep.
Some might say these are the trade-offs because of the decision to abolish GST and then to weaken the government's income side. Mm. Right? Where do you stand on that?
Well, I don't want to preempt my colleagues in the Ministry of Finance. They're still, I'm sure, finalizing their numbers. And the budget will be presented in 2 weeks' time. We regard the next 3 years as what we call a transition period, where we need to fix our house in that sense.
But does it have to come at the cost of the broader economy? It's not necessarily mutually exclusive now, is it?
Nope. We plan to balance the growth objectives and fiscal consolidation. That has always been our stance. And, you know, we heard about all this cancellation of projects, all these big projects. But truth be told, there are over 4,000 projects under development expenditure still on the ground, pushing the economy, driving high-impact projects that improve the well-being of the rakyat. So that is still going on.
All right, we now have on the line Lawrence Todd, again, the Director of Research and Development at the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs Ideas. Good morning, Lawrence. You're live on The Breakfast Grill right now. So judging by what you've seen from the midterm review of this 11th Malaysia Plan, what stood out for you? What was most interesting to you?
Hi. Well, look, I think the first thing to say is, you know, there's a huge amount in there. So, I mean, it's going to take us all some time to digest it. But there's also clearly a lot to like on political reform, transparency, procurement. I mean, I think all these are really welcome areas. I think that, and, you know, I hear that you were sort of touching on it just now. I think on the economy, there's a bit more of a mixed message. I think that the review does a very good job of identifying the right structural issues around human capital, income disparities. But I think on some of these trade-offs, as you were just discussing, I think there's a slightly disappointing move in potentially the wrong direction in a couple of areas. So I'd point to specifically tax and also the government's assets. So on tax, we now have a pretty clear confirmation that we're going to see a new tax in the digital economy. And I think it'd be great to get some clarity pretty quickly on what exactly that's going to look like given the potential impact in that high-growth sector.
All right.
And I think I think it's a bit of a shame to focus on that rather than reducing spending, where I think there's quite a lot of scope given the sort of inefficiency and waste across the whole public sector.
Puan Zakia, how do you respond?
Again, I would leave it to our colleagues in the Ministry of Finance to deliberate on the details. I don't want to preempt them. All the recommendations in the midterm review are being considered. We're just sharing the gist of it. We see again how the Ministry of Finance is going to treat all these new taxes and whatnot. So again, I would not. I don't want to preempt my.
Lawrence, aren't those concerns, well telegraphed? And because, in the lead up to GE14, the abolishment of GST, that was part of the manifesto and they've gone through with it. So naturally, you have to assume that there has got to be a plugging of the gap of sorts, right? Mm-hmm. Be it the digital tax, carbon tax. So really, I mean, how much of a disappointment is that?
Well, look, I mean, I think that's a very good point. I think part of the problem here is that, you know, in the campaign and in the manifesto, we didn't really get into these tougher choices that were going to come as a result of this decision on SST. And so, you know, I think on the plus side, it's definitely good that the government is being sort of realistic and honest and transparent about the fiscal challenges in the years ahead. I just think it's then, okay, let's have a discussion about how we resolve that. Mm. So do we want to focus on tax, you know, when we've got, you know, very large public sector, when we've got, you know, huge leakage of revenue from illicit trade, when we've got, you know, a very large government balance sheet, you know, and so on and so on and so on. So I think it's then about, okay, we didn't have the tough conversation in the campaign. Let's have the tough conversation now about how to shore up the government's finances.
Right. Thank you very much, Lawrence, for that. Puan Zakia, with the minute that we have left before we go to the news, you know, how did you guys have that tough discussion, as Lawrence describes it, between, again, the fiscal revenue side or perhaps the lack thereof versus the economic growth targets?
Right. It is a tough thing to balance. The government has since established a couple of committees to look into this. The fiscal policy committee has been now headed by the Prime Minister himself and supported by another committee to look at our other sources of revenue that we can dig into to support our fiscal account.
That was Puan Zakia Jaffa. She's the Deputy Director General for the Macroeconomic Section with the Economic Planning Unit. After the break, we'll take some of your questions. We know Muzaffar, Niam and others, you have sent your questions in. We'll try and address them after the 8:30 a.m. news. Folks, you can still send in your questions via WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Also, after the break, we'll be hearing from Azlan Awang. He's the Senior Fellow at the Malay Economic Action Council, MTEM. So all that's coming up right here on The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9.
You are listening to The BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Thanks for staying with us on this extended version of The Breakfast Grill right here on BFM 89.9. I'm Tan Chung Han, and still with us in the studio is Puan Zakia Jaffar, Deputy Director General for the Macroeconomic Section with the EPU. Again, that's the Economic Planning Unit. Puan Zakia, you've been getting plenty of love from our listeners here. You know, KK and also Muni Andy have messaged in saying that you're doing a stellar job. So keep up the good work here, Puan Zakia.
Thank you.
But let's go into some criticisms of the plan, and it is your job to maintain and uphold the integrity of this 11th Malaysia plan. So one of the criticisms coming from University Malaya political economy professor Terence Gomez, said that, you know, when it comes to the government trying to address the disparity between states, the details were perhaps lacking there. He suggests the government mobilizing the Rural Development Ministry and its agencies, MARA, etc., to make sure that that disparity is actively reduced. You know, are there details in this plan on how you're going to reduce the disparity between states?
Thank you. That's a good suggestion, actually. We need to organize ourselves. And as you can see, a lot of restructuring between the ministries to make it more efficient and functional. When we talk about addressing the regional imbalances in the next few years, it is very clear that we need to give focus to six states which we consider which needs more support: Sabah, Sarawak, Kelantan, Terengganu, Kedah and Perlis. So those six states will be given more focus in terms of development expenditure. You will see later. Secondly, we are now targeting clusters of activities as well across the states, and to attract investments. And each state, encourage to focus on a few focus areas. For instance, on agriculture, a bit on the mining side, on logistics, on tourism and education. Now the approach is more targeted in that sense.
Okay, but how though? Again, the details or how? Because these focus areas, you use the word focus, you mentioned those six states. Okay, we get that, but how?
Right. The strategies are and the initiatives are in the thick book. I don't have it with me here, but these states must modernize and diversify their economic base. That is very clear. For instance, when we look at the numbers last year, Kelantan's GDP per capita is 68% below national average. And that is very much tied to the structure of the economy, which is still based on traditional economic activities. Right. So diversifying the economic base must be the focus in these states.
So is it now up to the respective ministries to come up with the how and not the EPU's job? Is that what I'm getting here?
Well, we're going to do it together, because doing it together. We are the ones that provide the resources with them. But it must be bottoms up as well to meet the needs of the specific states.
It's fine. But why was this not found, or why were these details not rolled out even under the previous administration? Because, you know, the disparity between, like, Kelantan, you mentioned, versus Selangor is obviously stark, very pronounced. Everybody knows it. So yet you're saying till date there's no detailed action plan as to how to overcome that disparity?
Well, I don't want to dwell why we didn't do that much in the previous administration.
I kind of like to dwell on that, if you may.
But, you know, we have many, many agencies, actually, the regional corridors and authorities looking at these issues at state level. What we're doing now is to review the functions of all these agencies and authorities to ensure there are not there are no overlapping functions and wasting of resources. Mm. So that is, the first thing that we need to do, to review all the functions of all these regional authorities.
Okay, so manage our expectations here. What's the timeline here? When can that review be concluded? And more importantly, when can we find out those exact details for how you're going to not just reduce the income disparity between Malaysians, reduce the disparity between states, etc.?
Right.
How?
And when? When, yes. We're getting down to it as soon as possible. I can't pin down to a certain deadline, but certainly since there are KPIs provided for this area by 2020, we need to come up and meet the KPIs set.
All right. Mm-hmm. Now, another criticism from Professor Terence Gomez is, he questions, why is still the need for race-based economic policies? Your response.
Right. Our own internal research shows that, we were asked to measure the contribution of to the economy by ethnicity, not just the equity side, but the combining wealth and equity of all the ethnic groups. And it was surprising to find that the contribution of Bumi and non-Bumi and the foreigners are quite equal, about 33% each. And the question is not now so much the difference of contribution between the ethnic groups, but it's within the ethnic group itself. We found that it doesn't matter whether you're Bumi or non-Bumi, we found there is a large disparity within income group, between the income groups within an ethnic group. Mm. So the disparity is now intra-ethnic group. So we need to address that because the affirmative action in the past has now created an elite group, and we want to address that. That's why you see that a focus on raising the well-being of the bottom 40, no matter what ethnic group, is being again given focus in this sense.
Right. And speaking about overcoming the inequality within the respective ethnic groups, we now have on the line Azlan Awang, senior fellow at MTEM, that's the Malay Economic Action Council. Good morning, Azlan. So let's begin with your thoughts following yesterday's announcement.
Good morning, Assalamualaikum, Puan Zakia.
Waalaikumsalam, warahmatullah.
My thoughts are this. I think what Tun said about the development should no longer be measured by GDP only. I think that's a very good move. I think it sort of colours what Pakatan Harapan stands for. I think it's a new Malaysia. I think we should no longer be looking forward towards a more rakyat-centric policies and programs rather than mere investor and big business centric. So instead of measuring GDP, I think we are now looking at. Tun was saying that you should be now looking at measuring level of shared prosperity and how the rakyat's purchasing power is and so on. I think this is the direction that we should be moving towards, it should not be same old, this is how I feel, because this is a new Malaysia and rakyat is facing a lot of hardships and sufferings, cost of living and low wage and so on. I think it's got to change. We cannot, and what was mentioned earlier, Han, you mentioned that there's some quarters within the government preferring that the economy should be private sector driven. I think there's something wrong there. I think it should not be merely market private sector driven. I think Malaysia is not the economy should not be market driven. It should not be laissez-faire, right? There must be intervention, and otherwise, I think the what Puan Zakiah mentioned, the gap, the inequality will grow.
So We'll give Puan Zakia a chance to respond here. Okay, so obviously in Azlan's mind, he is saying that it shouldn't be so laissez-faire. It should be top-down. But a few times now you've said it's got to be bottom-up.
Oh, I'm so happy that Encik Azlan has raised this. If you look at our multidimensional goals, there are six of them, at least at macro level. The first three are classical economics goals that growth at the range given must be based on labor productivity and must generate higher per capita income. But if you look at the next three goals, those talks about inclusivity and people-centric in nature. This growth not only must generate higher income per capita, it must also generate higher compensation of employees. The workers must feel that they benefited from the fruits of development. And that also translated into a higher monthly household income, another target. And finally, what matters most at the end of the day is the well-being of the rakyat. And we do have a target for the well-being of the rakyat. And I think that is like the first. I hardly see any such target in any other country, actually, combining both the hard and soft aspect of the development. And what is different in this midterm review of the multidimensional goals, we superimpose the qualitative aspect of it. So yes, we want growth between 4.5 to 5.5, but it must be accompanied with reduced development gap between the states. And that, and when we talk about labor productivity, again, we must see the shrinking productivity gap between industries. And we talk about higher per capita income, it must accompany with narrowing income gap between the states and higher purchasing power, and so on. And all the other pillars are addressing all these qualitative aspects.
Well, execution risk notwithstanding, right?
Right, yes.
Thank you very much, Azlan Awang. Again, Senior Fellow at the Malay Economic Action Council, MTEM. Puan Zakia, I'm going to end with this question, right? So we actually met a couple of days ago, the day before the 11th Malaysia Plan midterm review was announced by the Prime Minister. This was at that briefing held by your minister, Dato Sri Azmin Ali there. And during his speech at that media briefing, he mentioned that the current challenge right now is to address restore the confidence of investors, both foreign and domestic. That implies, obviously, that some confidence has eroded. Okay? I'm looking at the ringgit right now, some live data. The Malaysian ringgit today, so far today, is the second worst performing Asian currency. South Korean won, blown out there, but Malaysian ringgit now weaker, now above 416 to the US dollar. Judging by what's in this 11th Malaysia plan, is it enough to restore confidence among investors, both domestic and foreign?
I wouldn't like to use the exchange rate as the sole indicator of our confidence. It is, again, affected by many things. But
I can bring up fund outflows from the stock and bond market as well. You know, granted, that's due to global trends. But again, the question remains, how does, as the economic ministers, economic ministers said, now, how do we restore confidence? That is a present challenge. Can we do it with this 11th Malaysia plan?
Look, we need to fix our fundamentals, and that is our main focus in the next 3 years. With good fundamentals, investors will be confident to invest in here. We have never never actually go against our words in terms of our structural issues, never go back on our policies in that sense. So we need to fix that first. Then the investment will come in. If you look at our engagement with rating agencies, they're quite confident with our fundamentals. It's just the fiscal side, the financing side that needs to be strengthened and fixed in that sense.
Puan Zakia, it's been a tremendous pleasure. Thank you so much for your time and your insights. I dare assume this will not be your last time on The Morning Run. That was Puan Zakia Jaffar, Deputy Director General for the Macroeconomic Unit at the Economic Planning Unit. I'm Tan Chung Han, and you've been listening to The Breakfast Grill right here on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Thank you for having us.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, Frost & Sullivan Malaysia's mobile data service provider of the year.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.